Hey there, my name is Gary Sims and this is Gary Explains. Now we've had the release of the Galaxy S21. In some areas you've got the Snapdragon 888, in other areas you've got the Exynos 2100. I've done videos here on this channel and over on the SpeedTest G channel showing the difference in performance and the battery life and the efficiency between the Snapdragon processor and the Exynos processor. And while the Exynos CPU is excellent this year and certainly up there, maybe even better than the Snapdragon processor, the GPU, we still have the Mali GPU, and it's not quite as good as the Adreno GPU from Qualcomm. Now, if you remember, back in 2019, Samsung signed a deal with AMD to provide a GPU for its processors, for smartphones and maybe for other devices. I'm thinking, you know, Chromebooks or something like that. And that was like 1.5 years ago. In a few months' time, it will be 2 years' time since that's happened. And a lot of people in the comments underneath my videos were saying, the AMD GPU will save the Exynos processor. The AMD GPU will solve all of Samsung's problems. So today I want to look at that question. Is that true? Will the AMD GPU solve all of Samsung's problems? Well, if you want to find out, please, let me explain. So as I said, back in summer of 2019, Samsung signed this deal with AMD so that it would replace the Mali GPU with the AMD GPU. Now, just a couple of things before we dive into this. One is, before anybody writes it down in the comments, yes, Adreno is an anagram of Radeon, because 10 years ago, Qualcomm did buy the mobile GPU department section of ATI Graphics, as it was then, but that was 10 years ago. And while the name was there kind of as a throwback to remember its roots, 10 years in technology is a long, long time. And please stop writing in the comments, but Qualcomm are using AMD's GPU anyway, because they're not, okay? They bought the company, all the staff, everything moved over, and they've been doing their own work, their own development on that for the last decade. So let's not continue with that nonsense, please. So, of course, AMD are very well known for its processors and for its GPUs. And, of course, it's got GPUs in the desktop. Now, of course, the challenge, what we're looking at, is can you take a desktop GPU and bring it right down to a mobile? So to do that, we're going to be looking at AMD's GPUs, this RDNA architecture. We're going to be looking at the challenges of bringing something down from the desktop to the smartphone, and see whether this really is a greater deal as some people are hoping. Okay, let's just dive in. So a quick refresher of the timeline. RDNA, this new Radeon DNA was announced in 2019. In May 2019, in June 2019, AMD and Samsung announced their strategic partnership for ultra low power, high performance technologies. AMD will license custom graphics IP based on the recently announced RDNA to Samsung for using its mobile devices, including smartphones and other products that complement AMD's product offerings. In July 2019, we had the AMD Radeon RX 5700 series. That's with the RDNA 1 architecture in it. Then in March 2020, we got RDNA 2 was announced. October 2020, we actually got the first RDNA 2 graphics card. And then in January 2021, Samsung confirms that the AMD GPU will be in the next flagship smartphone processor. Not necessarily in the next flagship smartphone, but the next flagship smartphone processor, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. So RDNA 1, as we're now going to call it, graphics processors built on the RDNA architecture will span from power-efficient notebooks and smartphones to the world's largest supercomputers and everything in between, including laptops and desktops and so on. To accommodate so many scenarios, the overall system architecture is designed for scalability while boosting performance over previous generations. So this was a new microarchitecture that AMD were working on and has worked on and released graphics cards with. Now, the big thing about the difference in the architecture before the previous architecture, which was the GCN architecture, is this Wave 32 idea. We'll just go into it very quickly. A kernel is a single stream of instructions that operate on a large number of data parallel work items. And of course, remember, with a GPU, the point is that you're working on lots and lots of things at the same time. So you apply the same maths to many, many pixels, vertices, whatever, in parallel. And that's how GPUs work. That's different to how CPUs work. In general, GPUs do lots of things on parallel things. And in the previous architecture, that sort of group of instructions that we're working on was called a wavefront, and it was with 64 items. And when every work item in a wavefront was executing exactly the same instruction, that was mega efficient because you got these 64 things happening in parallel. Do it once, do it twice, do it 64 times. Brilliant. However, the RDNA architecture is natively designed with a narrower wavefront now of 32 items called Wave 32. Now, why do that? Well, three reasons. First of all, that today's modern shaders and code that you write for GPUs is not just a simple set of instructions. You get loops and you get branches. And this means that when you get a block of 64 instructions that have to branch off and do something, then the overall efficiency suffers since each instruction will execute only a partial wavefront. And some of that wavefront is disabled, is not used because you branch somewhere else. A narrower 32-wave approach improves that efficiency for when you've got things like loops and branches going on. Secondly, the narrower wavefront completes faster and therefore uses fewer resources for accessing data, that's memory. So the Wave 32 model, for example, has half the number of registers, and since the wavefront will complete quicker because it's only doing 32 rather than 64, then those registers free up quicker, enabling the next and more active wavefronts. Thirdly, splitting the workload into smaller 32 data flows increases the number of wavefronts, which means that you get greater parallelism. Now here's the key, and we're going to talk a lot about this. The design block, the fundamental DNA, if we want to use that word, of the Radeon DNA, RDNA architecture is the dual compute unit. The dual compute unit. And you'll see that when AMD talk about their graphics cards, they talk about how many compute units it have. And they come in pairs. Okay, now the dual compute unit is the essence of the RDNA architecture and replaces the compute unit from the previous generation. Now inside of it, you have four SIMDs, that's single instruction, multiple data, units that operate independently, and each SIMD includes 32 ALUs. Now the ALU is the arithmetic logic unit. That's basically the thing that does the maths, the thing that does the actual calculation. Now that's twice as wide as what you had in the previous generation. So four SIMDs that work independently, and each one of those has 32 ALUs, and that is the structure of a compute unit, and they come in pairs and they share some of the stuff between them so that that they can work together in as a unit, but as a pair. So let's have a look at the Radeon RX 5700 XT. That comes with 40 compute units, and we can see here it's divided into shader engines. And depending on how you look at this diagram, I think there are four shader engines here, and each of those has five dual compute units. So that means there are 10 compute units in each shader engine, and then there are 40 in total, and they all share some common things. So for example, if we look at that, we can see there's a rasterization that happens in each shader engine. Okay, but then there are things like the geometry processor and the graphics command processor that are common amongst the four shader engines here. So in all these things, you start with the compute unit that is the minimum kind of low level architecture, the kind of the DNA here, and then that expands up to the dual compute engine, that expands up to a shader engine, and then there is even greater than that. You see that in the whole processor there are things that are shared amongst different things, like I said, the geometry processing and so on. So there's never anything that's independent. Everything is of course interlinked, and it just depends on how you drill down. But where you get the multiplication bit to the 40 CUs is you take those dual compute engines and you keep replicating them, and here we can see they're replicating them in bunches of five, meaning there's 10 CUs, and then there are four lots of those, and you can keep building that out as you get to bigger and bigger and bigger graphics cards. Or, and this is what we're going to talk about, you can shrink that down, and that's what we're going to have to talk about in a minute when we talk about smartphones. But of course, that does lead us to the interesting question: what is a core? Because we often talk about GPU cores. It's got 300 cores, it's got 12 cores, it's got thousands of cores, because it depends on what do you mean by a core. Is it the ALU, the thing that does the actual maths? And some people would say, yes, that's the core, because it's the bit that's doing the adding up. And there are lots and lots and lots of them. The more you have of those, the better and faster your graphics card is. Or is it the compute unit or the dual compute unit? That is also a question. Or is it the shader engine as you get it as a whole? Because you can't function, for example, without the geometry processor. So, you know, are there, because these things are required, is that the minimum kind of way you look at it? So when you talk about cores, when we talk about smartphones, when we talk about desktops, when we talk about compute units, it's very important to understand that terminology between NVIDIA, AMD, ARM with their Mali, Imagination Technology, Apple, they all use different terminologies for what they really mean as a core or as a compute unit or as a whatever the term they're using, so that we can kind of not try to make parallels between two different sets of terminology and say, oh, look, that's got 12, that's got 3,000. Oh, this must be better. We've got to really understand what's going on here. Now, RDNA 2, of course, is a tweaked version, an improved version of the fundamental same RDNA architecture, but they're saying there is a 50% increase in performance per watt. Now, of course, that's very important when it comes to dealing with smartphones, because RDNA 2 is more power efficient than RDNA 1. And it's also got some extra features. It's got ray tracing and it's got variable rate shading. Now, of course, variable rate shading is something we saw in the latest Snapdragon processor. And the other thing about RDNA 2 is that AMD have now a solid track record of providing its customers with a custom version of its RDNA architecture inside of a chip. So both the Xbox X and the PlayStation 5 use RDNA 2 type GPUs. There's some discussion about whether it's really RDNA 1, RDNA 2, RDNA 1.5, how much of it custom, how much of it, that's for all the Xbox and PlayStation people to talk about. But the point is AMD now have an established record of taking some custom work and doing it for another customer, Sony or Microsoft, so they can do it in their thing. And now they're doing a similar thing, but not quite the same, with Samsung, and seeing what they can provide for Samsung, but not now in the game console, but down at the smartphone, so a much lower target. And if you look at some of the chips that have been produced, you've got the RX 6800 with 72 compute units, you've got the RX 6800 without the XT part, 60 compute units, the 6900 XT with 80 compute units, but here is the important thing. They've quoted some power numbers. So the 6800 XT at 2 GHz plus, there's some boost clocks in there and so on, is 300 watts. And the 60 compute unit one is 250 watts. And then they've managed to keep it at 300 watts for the 80 compute unit version of the 6900 XT. Now, these numbers are important because we're dealing with 300 watts, and you've seen what these graphics cards look like. They've got big fans on them. You know, they're quite large, you know, bigger than a smartphone. In fact, the whole thing is bigger than what you get in a smartphone. Now, a smartphone doesn't deal with 300 watts or 200 watts or 50 watts. We're dealing with a few watts, 3 watts, 4 watts, 5 watts, depending on how you're allocating the budget between the CPU and the GPU. Now, that's obviously a magnitude different to what you get in a desktop PC. So the challenge for AMD is enormous to take that same architecture and take it from 300 watts down to 3 watts. Okay, now that's a huge change. So how are they going to do that? Now, I just did a quick calculation here, and you can see that if you take 300 watts and 80 compute units, that's 3.7 watts per compute unit. So that's huge. And if you have two of those, because they come in dual, that's, you know, over 6 watts, almost 7 watts. So that's nowhere going to be good enough for a smartphone. So something's going to have to be different. So first of all, are they going to use RDNA 1 or RDNA 2? My guess is it's going to be based on RDNA 2 because it is more power efficient, and AMD have been underlining the power efficiency of RDNA 2. And also it fits in with the timelines from when RDNA was announced, when Samsung took the agreement with AMD and so on and so on. So it looks like it's going to be RDNA 2 because of power efficiency, because it does fit in well with the timelines. And then the first question is, how many compute units is it going to be? How many compute engines is it going to be? And of course, really, it's going to be a minimum of two, because they come in this dual compute engine design, which, as we read earlier, is the essence of the RDNA architecture. So if you have two of those, and we saw that's quite a high wattage number, there's some other things that are going to have to change. Now, one of the big things, of course, change is the clock frequency. We're talking about 1.8 gigahertz, 2 gigahertz, boosting up to higher numbers. So obviously, when you go down to a smartphone, we're talking much, much lower. We're talking probably 500 megahertz, 400 megahertz. I don't know. We'll see what the final numbers are, but it's not going to be 2 gigahertz GPU in no way whatsoever. And lowering that frequency, maybe they can also lower the voltage. And the voltage is the key thing, because part of the power equation means whatever the voltage level is, when you square that, that actually has an impact on the power. So small changes in the voltage can actually have a big impact on battery life. So we need to bring down the voltage, bring down the clock speed, reduce the number of compute units down to the bare minimum, and then apply some kind of smartphone only optimizations to the RDNA 2 architecture. And then that's the kind of direction that AMD will be going in to build this GPU. And then of course, on top of that, we've got to ask ourselves the questions, what about the features? Will there be the ray tracing in it? Will there be the variable rate shading? My guess would be you'll get variable rate shading, you won't get ray tracing. Just a guess, because ray tracing is still new in the desktop area. It'd be nice to have it in mobile, but for their first generation they're giving to Samsung, I think let's just leave that out and let's just go with something that works with Vulkan and OpenGL and all that kind of stuff. Don't worry about ray tracing at the moment. But variable rate shading is good for battery life, and of course that is important because you can shade less pixels, you can kind of take the neighbor and say, oh, I'll be the same color as him, and that way you don't have a problem. You can reduce the amount of power you need, and that's great for smartphones. And so the final question is, will we see this in the Note 21 at some point later in this year, or will we first see it in the S22 in 2022? According to Ice Universe, well-known leaker on Twitter, we will see Samsung release Samsung with AMD GPUs in the second or the third quarter of 2021, which will be using the next Exynos 2000 and 1000 series. Of course, Samsung may change the release time of these processors. So he's basically saying that it is a possibility we're going to see it in the Note 21. That's what he's saying. Samsung haven't denied or confirmed that. It would be interesting for them actually to come up with the Note 21, make it actually differentially different than the S21. The S Pen was obviously one of the big differences. That maybe it's kind of worn a bit thin. Maybe that's not really that such a big difference nowadays. If it had a whole new processor in it, that would be great. And then the S22 could kind of pick it up from there. And then maybe we'll see this new thing that in fact it's the Note series that launches the processor, and the S range follows on the year round rather than the